It's got the wrong ears. They're shaped differently or something because of the headphones. Oh, this just in, the D.C. NFL team has been renamed the Washington Palefaces. Well, what do you know?
Not much.
Okay.
Live from Roanoke, Virginia to Little Rock, Arkansas, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, author and poet Nicholson Baker, all the news that isn't in the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who will not blame the Holy Spirit for any of this, it's Michael Feldman.
Yeah, buck stops here. All right. Well, the government returns to normal malfunction, so that's the good news. Well, the biggest change, of course, is a name change to protect our credit rating. It is now the U.S. AAA Plus. The agreement was finally reached after pushing Mitch McConnell over a $3 billion dam. Worth every cent. A stenographer yelling about the Freemasons was the only one who made sense during the whole ordeal, I would say. Of course, then they dragged her off. She said the Holy Spirit made her do it, marking the first appearance of the Holy Spirit in Congress. In other news, or related, I guess, the National Zoo's baby panda is back home after spending 2 weeks in a cardboard box on the mall. Breakdancing for bamboo. In other news that isn't, leaker William Snowden says he took no secret documents to Russia but did smuggle 25 snakes in his undies. Is this on? Oh, I'm afraid it is. Oh, that's unfortunate. Let's see, in the ancient skull discovery confirms our worst fears, there is only one species of man. And they're all the same, like they told us all these years. It's true. The Yeti remains, they examined some Yeti remains and proved that the abominable snowman was actually part polar bear and part Ted Cruz's cousin. rare 18-foot oarfish turns up at Trader Joe's as smoked sturgeon. That's where they'll end up, you know, that's why they're so rare. Okay. It rains diamonds on Saturn, but no such luck on Uranus. In his defense, the substitute teacher who passed out in class from heroin did not expect to be called that day. Come on, he's a sub. The Vatican says that was not a misspelling on the religious medal. That was his half-brother, Lesus.
Not very well known.
No, not very well known. Less well known, certainly. Okay. The Better Business Bureau has downgraded the Tea Party to B-minus some complaints. I'm glad John is enjoying this. Anyhow, just me and you, buddy. The Obamacare sign-up leaves the troubled website for Twitter, but coverage is now limited to 140 characters. So. Get what you can out of that. Costco chicken may have salmonella, but you sure get a lot of it. Trade-off. The altruism gene discovered before being given away. Oh, those altruists. It has been learned... I always wanted to say that. It has been learned that presidentially obese William H. Taft used a low-carb diet to slim down to Woodrow Wilson. That's actually what happened there. If I could say it, that's what happened. A sharp increase noted in Republican-on-Republican crime. China, meanwhile, has been trading pandas for reactor uranium, because the little fellows would not stay in the cooling tubes. Kept crawling out. Cute, though. It was cute when they did it. Excuse me. A man declared legally dead learns to live with it. Uncle Max's particle loses out to God particle at Nobel's. All right, I'll take it out. Anything referenced to Uncle Max, I always like, but still. The Tesla electric car burst into flames, showing the difficulties of making them out of wax. People burn more calories when standing up, but tend to launch into comedy routines. You think I'd get one of these, right? And finally, and I mean that, inebriated Milwaukee man gets jail for voting twice, even though his votes canceled each other out. That's all the news of this. And thank you so much. Good night. And to all the ships. Yeah, okay there now. Nicholson Baker's got a new book out. It's called Traveling Sprinkler. Any of you have a traveling sprinkler, by the way? And Gretna, they must have traveling. Yeah, do you have one in Gretna, Nebraska? I'm surprised. Do you have a neighbor who has? Have you seen them?
Only in antique shops.
In antique shops. I think they still make them. We'll find out. Nicholson Baker knows all about them. And he's online with us now from Maine, South Berwick, I guess. Hi, Nicholson. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. This traveling sprinkler thing is kind of, I know it's a metaphor, isn't it? Got to be.
It's got to be a metaphor because it's a whole novel.
That's really stretching a metaphor, isn't it, an entire novel?
Well, I thought, you know, nobody has devoted a whole novel to a garden care implement.
But why the traveling sprinkler?
I don't know if you know what they look like.
I looked them up. They're nice.
Okay.
They're cool.
Yeah, well, my father bought a traveling sprinkler for me when I was about eight. We went to Sears, and there was this little tractor, this cast iron tractor, and you know, it was clear you hooked the hose in the back, and the thing swirled around, and there was a gear in the middle that moved two levers that pulled it forwards very slowly through the garden. And I thought, man, this is the most beautiful American invention I've ever seen. And my father bought it for me.
Yeah.
And when we moved to Maine, he gave me the ancestral traveling sprinkler, and it's been in our barn ever since. I've been sort of saving it up as the beginning of a book.
And you lay the hose out, and then it will travel its own hose, right? Basically.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about it is that you set the route up in advance, so the hose, which is its source of power, becomes its history, really. Mm-hmm. Becomes its future, I guess you could say.
Ah, is this where the metaphor comes in then?
Exactly. Yeah, right, exactly. You'd be, novelists, you know, set up a sort of a rough idea of where they want to go.
Yeah.
And then they go. And sometimes it doesn't work and the traveling sprinkler gets off the hose.
Yeah. Well, I guess we've all had that happen. But
It was invented a long time ago. Yeah. 1941 was when the design came in. This guy in North Platte, Nebraska, came up with this little tractor. And I just thought, wow, this is what, you know, American ingenuity is good at this kind of thing. And we should celebrate it and think about it.
It was, anyway. And then, is it possible to write a book without any garden metaphors?
Well, I've done it before. I mean, this is my 15th book. I started with the escalator because I thought that was the primal invention.
Right.
The first book I wrote was about a guy getting on the bottom at the bottom of an escalator, riding it up to the mezzanine, thinking about things, and he gets off at the top. So it's a travel book.
And Vox really is about just a telephone, really, right?
Very much about a telephone. Well, it's about two people at the end of different telephones.
Yeah.
And they get naked and talk about things.
Yeah. By the way, you've been accused of ruining pornography with that book. Do you want to respond to that? Yeah, actually, the man who ruined pornography for everybody. Nicholson.
Oh, God.
Blake.
Well, I felt that pornography was in a bad way. literary pornography was all about talking about your pets in your house and your infidelities and all sorts of non-pornographic things. And I thought, why not devote an entire book to a kind of mutual seduction? Have it be one gigantic sex scene so that the things that were not dirty were actually more forbidden, you know?
Yeah.
When you started to talk about traffic lights, you weren't talking about sex, and so you were kind of transgressing.
Yeah. But I think it wasn't a complaint that the way they talked about sex made it totally sexless. Because they went into details about it. You know, they did a Nicholson Baker, and went off with their sprinkler going down the hose line.
I thought it was sex. I was excited at the time I wrote it. What can I say?
And I guess Monica did give it to Bill. That's what I heard. Did you hear that?
She thought it was exciting.
Yeah.
But yes, she was. She gave her own copy to Bill Clinton, and that was one of the best things that's ever happened to me. Really.
Yeah.
Of course, it wasn't something we want on the national news. We don't want married presidents doing strange things with interns. But
no.
But the idea that she gave my book as a present to him was a great honor.
You and Leaves of Grass, you and Whitman.
I forgot that.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's cool.
Walt Whitman, who does not rhyme.
No. And Paul Chowder, of course, in this book. This is the second Paul Chowder.
Right. I wrote a book back in 2009, which was about this guy who is living in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, fairly near where I live. He's got a barn. He's up in the barn singing a lot, trying to write an introduction to a collection of rhyming poetry, even though he himself is a non-rhyming poet, and it's becoming more and more difficult because he has to kind of be a master of ceremonies for all of the greatness of British and American poetry. He thinks about the depressive poets and their love lives and iambic pentameter and everything else.
Yeah.
And it has to, at some point, become a novel, and that's the trick.
Yeah. At some point in his life, being anthologized kind of ruined his life or something, didn't it?
Well, it wasn't necessarily a... I have a huge collection of poetry anthologies because I'm fascinated by the choices that people make. Mm-hmm. Why do you pick a certain poem, you know? When I read a poem in an anthology, I think, wow, that is great. That particular line is great. But then three lines down, there's a terrible line, you know, and you have to put up with the terrible line as well as the good line. And Paul Chowder thinks about an anthology that would just be not of poems, but just of good lines from poems. And then he thinks, no, there's often an especially good word in a good line. And so that it would be an anthology of a particular word in a particular line. So one word from each poem.
Right. And then he thinks about all kinds of things. I mean, that's what's interesting about Paul Chowder, and I suspect Nicholson Baker, is that he branches out in what are, to him, I guess, related discussions or interests, such as the sunken cathedral and so forth, and the bassoon.
The bassoon, right.
Yes.
Well, I was a bassoonist in high school, and I spent a year at the Eastman School of Music and, you know, practiced the bassoon so hard that I had to play it with my jaw dislocated slightly, and it pushed my two front teeth apart. You know, I was really devoted to this instrument. It's a beautiful, it's got a kind of suppressed, lyrical human sound to it, but it's very soft. It looks like it would make a lot of noise, but it doesn't. And I got a job as the fourth bassoonist at the Rochester Philharmonic, which means nobody ever heard me, but I had a white bow tie on.
Oh, you were the fourth. They had three ahead of you?
Yeah, there were three ahead of me.
It's a big bassoon section, isn't it, for an orchestra?
Well, right. So they would only hire me, and I was a member of the bassoonists union, or I guess the musicians union. So if there was a big Bruckner or Mahler symphony, then I was the guy. I came on.
Yeah. Why bassoon, though? I mean, when we were in school, most of us get a chance to pick an instrument, and you take a trumpet or, you know, drums or something like that. Why bassoon?
Well, I thought briefly about drums, but the thing about the bassoon is it looks so interesting. It's got these very, very long keys that are nickel-plated, and so you touch something with your left thumb. You control something like 12 keys with your left thumb, and they reach all over this thing. It's very Victorian, and it feels mechanical, and yet out of it comes something lyrical. I guess that's what appealed to me.
Yeah.
And then I heard Stravinsky's solo, the Firebird solo, which is just such a stunningly beautiful, simple melody. And I thought, man, I want to play that. I really, really want to be able to play that.
Mm-hmm. And yet Stravinsky was no Debussy.
Stravinsky was no Debussy. Okay, well, this book, Traveling Sprinkler, is really about my attempt to think about Stravinsky and Debussy, but also to be a reasonable, normal human being. You know, what we think about all sorts of things in our lives. Sometimes they're political grievances, and sometimes you think about Claude Debussy's Piano Preludes, and sometimes you make an egg salad sandwich. How do you balance all that in a novel?
Yeah, that's where the traveling sprinkler going around spraying all over the place, right? Basically?
Why not?
Even if on a track, going down its history, all these things get sprinkled all over, sprayed all over.
Yes, and the trick is, how do you do that and not become tiresome?
Yeah. Have you figured that out yet or not?
Well, it's always risky. I mean, that's the experiment with every book. How close do you come to real life without becoming a mere transcriber and a kind of a retailer of the boring mundane? How do you become keep strangeness and surprise and even maybe a little humor in there at the same time you are giving us the texture of what life really feels like.
Yeah, and I love this. This section on metaphorical interference. I loved it so much. I took it downstairs and read it to my wife, and this has never happened before. I mean, I tried a couple times. I read her things. She always gets them wrong, or doesn't think they're interesting or funny. But she even liked it.
That's incredibly.
Yeah.
You know that I first started listening to your show back when I was driving on Route 390 from a place in upstate New York called Mount Morris, where we were living. We called it Mount Misery. And I would drive north to Rochester, New York, and I heard this guy on the radio that was just so incredibly quick, who could just cut through all of the stuff and get to the little nugget of humor in what somebody had said. And I just thought, I can never do that. I'm so jealous.
Oh, no, but, well, I don't know if you do it. I think you do, but Paul Chowder, that's his whole life, isn't it? I mean, the conflict of metaphorical, you know, there are so many metaphors going on at the same time that they interfere with one another and tend to cancel one another out, right?
So say you've decided, okay, the traveling sprinkler is your central controlling metaphor, and then you also want to write about Debussy's Sunken Cathedral. Those things are so far apart mentally that they create a kind of interference pattern, a purple fringing kind of thing when they conflict.
Right.
And I decided in this book that I would empty myself and just put everything I had in the book and see and watch them conflict and accept the fact that, you know, that too many colors make the rinse water muddy, you know, in those glasses in grade school when you were doing watercolors. But that, so what? You have to risk muddiness sometimes.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a tough one. By the way, isn't it actually the swallowed cathedral? Because I looked at isn't the French word for swallowed as opposed to sunken?
It's englouti.
Yeah.
La cathédrale englouti, which means submerged.
It does?
It just doesn't sound as good. If you talk about the submerged cathedral, it doesn't fit English as well as sunken cathedral.
Okay. So it's not swallowed, because I thought I had something there because I looked it up.
Well, I mean, swallowed would be good, too, because...
Yeah.
Debussy was really, let me tell you about Debussy for a minute. He was a guy with a huge forehead.
Oh.
The music was all in his forehead. He looked like a banker in a way. He's this brilliant guy who could noodle around for hours, and then he ran into money worries. He married a person he thought she had money, but her father disinherited her. And then he thought, what am I actually going to do that is of value here? And he wrote these 12 piano preludes that just, and the 10th of them is called the Sunken Cathedral. And it's an incredible piece of music. It's my favorite piece of classical music. It's why I wanted to become a classical composer.
Huh.
It evokes this sense of kind of floating through blue but somewhat misty, indistinct water and seeing a medieval ruin kind of hovering closer to you, and the fishes are swimming down the nave, and it's, you know, there's seaweeds around. It's just an amazing piece of music, an evocation.
Yeah, I listened to it.
What did you think?
It starts slow, but it builds.
Well, it's got a good beat.
No, I liked it a lot. And it is, it's unique, it seems to me. I've never heard anything quite like it.
What he did was he used this, you know, there's those three pedals. When I was a kid, I used to arrange my army men around the underneath a grand piano. My friend had a grand piano, and we would set up these army kind of conflicts near the pedals of the grand piano. So the pedals were always crucial, and there are three of them, and you feel as if you're driving something when you're playing the piano. You know, if you hold the sustain pedal down, you're going somewhere.
Was he holding all three for this prelude? Or?
I think he was holding two of them down, yeah. The softest pedal. And he also did this other thing that was interesting. You know how grand pianos can open up sort of like cicadas or something? They open up one wing. But he put the top of the piano down so that it would muffle the sound.
Yeah.
He was very edgy and ahead of his time.
Yeah. And Stravinsky was sort of the opposite. Was that right?
Stravinsky was from Russia. He was a very ambitious younger composer. He learned lots of harmonic tricks from Debussy. And then he wrote this thing called The Rite of Spring, which is important to all bassoonists because it begins with this gigantic... Very, very seldom that a bassoon gets to start anything, gets to start a whole orchestra going. And The Rite of Spring is sort of the adolescent male fantasy of what music could possibly be. The whole orchestra is a giant percussion section. But it starts with this very plaintive Russian kind of folk melody on the bassoon. Really just very simple, but in the high register. So he's sort of torturing the bassoon. He's saying, you know, you're going to try to sound like a flute, but you're not a flute. You're just this anonymous person struggling and, you know, leaking air around the reed and doing the best you can do.
You're not a flute. Did you ever think about going to the flute? Probably a little easier than the bassoon.
The flute is made of metal. It's too understandable. I felt that the bassoon had more reach. Also, flutists were better musicians than I was.
Oh, okay. And that's not. It wasn't as competitive in bassoon.
I mean, look. If you look at the hierarchy of piano and violin is at the top, and then you move down. You move down through the stratum of the orchestra. You can be a trombonist, and below the trombonist are the bassoonists. Not to say that there aren't really great, brilliant, beautiful, genius bassoonists, but
yeah. Or trombonists, for that matter.
Or trombonists.
Yeah, it's got to be but somewhere.
You can make a mark as a bassoonist. You can make a mark when you wouldn't have even been a contender as a violinist.
Yeah. Now, writers and poets and so forth. Now, that end of things. This particular one, Paul Chowder, is at the point in his writing history where he needs a new drug to write. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I needed a new drug to write.
Oh, okay. This is not about you, though, is it? I mean, come on, this is a...
Well, everybody always pretends. You know, fiction writers always want to make it sound as if it's all fiction, but let's be real, it's not all fiction. It's 87% fiction, and then you arrange things, you know.
Yeah.
But I went to a cigar store in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where this book is set, and said, listen, I need to finish a book, and I want something really powerful. And he said, oh, you want something robust. And he took me into the secret chamber of cigar boxes, which is all carefully humidified and special air circulation. It's like a bookstore. It's like a rare book room of cigars. And he said, now, how strong do you want it? And I said, I want it to just knock me on upside the head and mop the floor with me. I need something really powerful because I need to finish this book, and it's hard. And he said, you need a Fausto cigar.
Fausto.
Can you believe that name?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and it has a red label, and I bought a bunch of them. And I wrote the entire book sitting in my green Kia Rio. It's about a 10-year-old car. Smoking these things, and it was really a revelation how amazingly powerful tobacco can be.
Did you start with Skoal, though, as in the book?
Yeah, I thought, well, I don't want to be a smoker, so I bought a can of Skoal tobacco and stuffed a massive wedge of that in my mouth, and then I was the next thing I knew, I was lying on the grass kind of moaning and retching. Talk about a powerful drug. That is too powerful.
Skoal.
That's for the Marines, you know.
Yeah. And but the pipe thing didn't work for you?
the pipe was a lot of work. You had to stuff things in. You bought this thing that looked like a nail and stuff the tobacco in. It was a lot of work to light it. I burned my thumb trying to light it. But a cigar is a very simple thing. That's stuff grown in Nicaragua, and it's wrapped with leaves of tobacco grown in Connecticut, which I had no idea. There's a whole culture of cigars. Not to say that anyone should smoke them, but you know, for as a temporary expedient, it's not bad.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the other thing I like, there's many things I like about this book, but I really like the Quaker meetings and the idea of not saying too much at a Quaker, or knowing what to say at a Quaker when you feel like getting up to speak.
Yeah, so I'm not my mother's family was Quaker, but I never was. I was raised as a kind of non-theist person. I don't have a godly side, I guess, that's too much in evidence. But I started going to these Quaker meetings and realizing that the silence was powerful, and I was sitting amidst these good people who were trying to think their best thoughts, and the idea with Quaker meeting, there's no part of it that's programmed. There's no singing. There's no person who's in charge, really. It just happens, and so anyone can say anything. And the only bit of etiquette is that you're not supposed to pop up right after somebody else has said something. You're supposed to let the silence work.
Yeah, and you can't hitchhike on that. I like to hitchhike on that remark.
Yeah, you can't come up and say and another thing and just hop right in. It's wrong to do that. But the idea is to be unprepared and to think of the fragmentary idea that somebody has said, possibly say it, the things that hour long. So say somebody, there's been 20 minutes of silence and somebody finally says something at 10 minutes to 11. Well, at about 12:03, the idea, whatever thoughts that person has had have kind of caromed around the room, and then somebody else can stand up and say something that somehow has developed from that earlier incomplete idea. It's a very collaborative thing, and it actually is, well, it's helpful to me as a writer, but it's also just, it just helps me think, give me the illusion that I'm becoming a better human being, I guess.
Yeah, it's really nice. And what was it Paul Chowder finally got up to say? He had a rather elaborate thing he'd been saving and finally got to say it.
Well, right. I wanted to say something. I tried to say something about the sunken cathedral, because after all, that's what you, when you're a novelist, you get to write down and actually groom a little bit the things you didn't say in Quaker mm-hmm. meeting. So I suppressed it for a while.
No, not you. Paul Chowder.
I'm sorry. Yes. We want to make the distinction. I mean, the difference between Paul Chowder and me is that I live in Maine, and I am happily married, and I have two grown children. He is sort of my alter ego if he had never met the person that is my wife. This is what my life would be like. I'd be kind of more of a lost soul trying to figure things out without any help, and it would be a very bad situation. But anyway, he stands up and talks about Paul McCartney's Blackbird song, I think, at the end.
Yeah, that was very nice, too. He also has very eclectic taste in music, if nothing else.
Well, I do, because I find that when I'm writing, I sometimes need to hear really thumping trance music in the headphones mm-hmm. as loud as possible. The loudness of the music distracts me from the fact that the writing of the day before maybe wasn't so good.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And the character here, Paul Chowder, actually in this book sets out not to write a poem, but to write a song, and hopefully a protest song. With a funkadelic dance beat.
Exactly.
Yes.
Why not? We all have political feelings. This was written during an election period, and there was it was just constant. And I thought, let politics into this book, because you're trying to tell the truth about life. So how do you react when you've read a piece of upsetting news? You can write a letter to the editor or write essays. I've tried to write books that were somewhat political. Mm-hmm. They only go so far, and I needed help. So the help of harmony and melody is, I mean, it's, you're actually, I, what I thought was, okay, maybe you won't agree with my political opinions. They are a little bit out there. I'm a pacifist. I don't think that exploding things on people's heads in distant countries with unmanned vehicles is a good idea for in any way. But I can sing about that, and I'll have the help of some nice chords.
Yeah.
That was the idea. So I finished 12 songs in as I was writing the book, or maybe I finished them a little bit after I wrote the book. But so the 12 songs are available on the ebook, and you can see whether Paul Chowder, you know, has any talent or not.
Oh, now it's Paul Chowder. When it comes to the critics, it's Paul Chowder.
You have to make your... The great thing about being a novelist is you can make your little scenes and set off your little explosions and then run away and say it was all in character.
Yeah, all in character. Well, Traveling Sprinkler is the name of the novel, and it's you definitely should read it. It's a great one. And Nicholson, it was delightful speaking to you.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Very nice. Nicholson Baker, ladies and gentlemen. Traveling Sprinkler is the book. Okay. It's on Blue Rider Press. You can see the rest of that and learn a little bit about Debussy. More about the bassoon than you thought you'd ever know. Yeah.
I think I read one of his books.
Yeah.
It was where this guy, he could stop time.
Oh, yeah. That was him.
Yeah. He did some kind of weird things.
Yeah. A little sexy time there, too.
Yeah. It would undress people and stuff.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well. He's wide-ranging, let's put it that way. It's a very good book. And very funny and actually
He's an interesting guy.
Like quite him. Profound as well. At least as close as I get to profound, I have no idea. But
No.
How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
What are you reading these days? I bet you're reading something, middle of something right now.
No, I'm not reading anything right now.
Yeah, that's unusual.
Well, I'm reading a bunch of stuff, but nothing that.
Yeah? Okay.
This and that.
All right. What do you want to talk about then? Anything?
No, not
really. Did you shave this morning? It sounds a little scratchy.
No, I shave the night before, so then it cuts my getting ready time in the morning.
That sometimes works. Do you shave in the shower?
Oh, God, no.
No?
You cut yourself
I always
like
do. That's why I look like this.
Oh, that's why you missed the whole front there, that little thing?
Yeah, everything, yeah.
Oh, do you have a mirror in there?
No, I kind of feel around my face. It's really a bad idea, but I don't have any shaving cream. I had a can of shaving cream that lasted about 10 years, and it's gone. And I was shaving the shower, and it's terrible. That's why my look at these are not even at all.
No, I know.
Yeah,
you need some supervision there.
Someone in the shower really to point. Missed the spot. Okay, so this here's song is.
This here's song is a standard, but we're doing it slightly different. We're doing it in a more of a kind of Latin straight eighth kind of.
Okay.
Mode, so
all right.
It's called I'll Take Romance.
Does Jeff know that you're doing it in Latin? Thing?
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
Yeah, he does.
Okay. All right. I want to spring that on. Okay. All right. Ann Chisholm of Grand Rapids, why should my daughter attend UW-Madison for 4 years? Do you mean as opposed to 6 or 7 years? Because no one gets through in 4 years anymore. Where is Ann? Oh, you're way back there. Yeah. Did you mean the length of time or do you mean the school? Oh, school. Good as any other. I don't know. Land grant. What the heck? Good land grant school. I went here. Look at me. Huh? Okay. Yeah, sure. What the heck? What you going to study? Oh, there you are. Why are we talking about you? And you're right there. Environmental science? You'll love it. Great environmental science. I have no idea. I was in English, and that's useless. Don't go into English. You know. It's like, what can you do? You speak it, so you might as well take it. You know, I'm an English major. I can speak English my entire life. Karen Bakken, why do birds congregate on power lines? I always thought it's because there must be a little heat generated from the power, right? And it warms their little feet. They're up there warming their little feet, so I was thinking, you know, I would do that, I guess. But they all face the same direction. That's kind of weird. I think some would be going looking the other way. That bothers me. But the cows do that, too, because of that stray voltage. They're out there warming their hooves. But they're all facing the same way. So they line up magnetically, I think, when the power runs through them. Then they automatically point north. But that's cows, and that's not birds. It doesn't answer your question. Okay. John from Green Bay. Heavy equipment. John. Where is John? Oh, hi, John. Come on, get up. Stand up here. I got to meet you, John. This is the most complicated question I've ever been asked in all these years. Is this what you think about when you're running that heavy equipment?
Among many other things, yeah.
This guy who wrote the book here. Go out of a lot of directions.
Can I make an observation?
Go ahead.
This is my girl and I. This is our first time coming to your show live, but we've listened for many years, and I've always kind of listened to your voice and envisioned you to look like that actor Jack Lemmon.
Yeah. A dead actor. You look like a dead actor.
But in person, you're much more Walter White with the goatee.
What? That could have been worse. That could have been worse. Thank you very much. Here, you read this because I don't understand a thing you said there. Maybe you can explain.
Michael, what is your perspective on this modern age of ours, where it seems like everything made of atoms is manufactured in China, and everything that's made of bits is programmed in India? What is America's place in this modern age?
Sit down, will you? Nice meeting you, though, man. Boy, I don't know what that means. Huh?
Now you know what I put up with.
Nice guy, though, but what he's thinking about these things, and he's operating some heavy machinery. Yeah, I can't answer you, but I'm going to come back next week. You come next week, I'll have an answer for this question. I need to do a little research, and otherwise... Sue Powers from Dubuque is here. How far is it from here to the Wollersheim Winery? I don't know, but it's a lot quicker on the way back, I'll tell you that. Even if it takes longer, it seems a lot quicker. Wollersheim Winery, anyone give directions? You've been there, though, right? You don't know where? Okay, they want to get to the Wollersheim Winery.
25 miles, take 12.
Take 12?
Yes, the Beltline turns into 12, and you go up and...
Take the Beltline, go to 12. 188.
Which is right south of Sauk.
And you turn right? Why don't I let you say it, because I'm missing. I'm really bad at directions, so here it is.
Okay, you take the Beltline, which is 12. West. Stay on it, going west. And you go all the way up almost to Sauk Prairie.
How do you know when you're almost to Sauk?
Because you see a sign that says...
almost Sauk Prairie.
Yeah. And if you get to the Wisconsin River, you've gone too far. But if... That's Sauk. And so then you turn right on Highway 188, and then you turn, and Wollersheim's will be on your right, about three or four miles down the road.
Okay. All right. But if you hit the water, you've gone too far. Thank you very much. I give terrible directions. I'm so glad you did that. All right. I think we should probably play around to the What Do You Know quiz, is what I'm thinking. Okay, about time, she's saying. All right, get through this already. Here's a chance for you to win fabulous prizes simply for being fabulous. Who here would like to try their hand at the What Do You Know quiz? The mother of all quizzes, as we like to call it. Okay, don't all get up at once here. Oh, all right, you would? Okay, all right. She's calm, she's cool, she's confident. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm Pam Stevens.
Oh, hi, Pam Stevens. You from here or where?
I'm from Fort Collins right now, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
But I used to live here 40 years ago.
Oh, you did? Okay, finally got back, huh?
Yeah, I'm on my nostalgic tour.
You did, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Pam Stevens, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because it'll really make my trip to Madison stand out forever in my mind.
Stand out. Okay, that's a good reason right there. An outstanding trip. Or a stand-outing trip. Careful here. If you fall here, we're reliable, so I want you to make sure you get up here. Have a seat there if you would. That's all yours. The water is fresh.
Nice touch here on the legs.
Barbie?
I say nice touch on the legs of the bench.
Oh, yeah, we had a little problem there. What's I know it's under there anymore, a book or something. Pam, right?
Yes.
Yes. So what field or area of interest are you in these days?
I'm interested in retirement right now,
yeah.
But I used to teach. When I lived here, I taught in Mesomany for 4 years.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And what did you teach?
Second grade.
Second grade is the best grade, isn't it?
Yeah. It was pretty
first
good.
Grade, they're still, you know, getting it together. Second grade, they're full blown, aren't they? Kids, I mean, that's a great
Yes, grade. They are, yes.
Is that what age? It'd be about 7 years old,
mm-hmm.
maybe, something like
yeah.
that? That's your third grade, they're jaded.
Definitely.
You know, you can't tell them anything in third grade. Fourth grade, forget it. Yeah, it gets worse in there. But second grade, yeah.
Okay.
Have you have a chance to see those kids as they grow up and all that stuff? And
I didn't.
No.
I wish I could.
Yeah, because you moved to Fort Collins.
Yep.
What'd you do that for?
Oh, I don't know. Wanted to be by the mountains. Now oh. I wish I was back here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's cool. And did you teach as well in Fort Collins?
Around there, yeah.
Yeah. Second grade still, or?
Some second grade, some remedial reading,
mm-hmm.
but second grade was better.
Second grade is better, yeah. What's the secret to be, there are people out there thinking, going into education and so forth, and why second grade?
Well, like you said, they know the ropes now. They're not like first graders who don't know where to go, and,
yeah.
and they haven't gotten jaded yet, so they're yeah, really
okay.
kind of
Me and I was
kind of
right
excited.
About something.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
That's really good. Second grade was good for me, I know. Went downhill from that. All right, Pam, someone out there plays along with you. That's how this quiz works. Are you familiar mm-hmm. with it?
Yep.
Pretty much general knowledge, if not trivia. And someone out there dials in. What is that number then, Sarah?
People who want to play the quiz, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669, and you ask them a qualifying question.
Did you like second grade, didn't you?
I don't remember much about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a nun as a teacher.
Oh, well, that's a factor then.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. We had Mrs. Rose, second grade. Everybody loved Mrs. Rose.
Did she wear a habit? No.
No.
Wimple.
She was civilian. Yeah. This was Sherman School in Milwaukee. It's all civilian. All right, so did you give the number?
I did, yeah.
Okay. What was it again?
1-800-942-5669.
Yeah, okay. Easy way to remember that?
1-800-WA-NO or 1-800-WHACK-NOW.
WHACK-NOW.
WHACK-NOW.
WHACK. Dusty's on the line here from Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Dusty.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
I'm great.
Yeah, you got some good weather there in Asheville? Or?
Yeah, it's chilly. You know, it's perfect fall weather.
Chilly. How chilly is chilly?
55.
Well, it's chilly. Okay. It's chilly. Sure. Not bad. And then you got a big day planned, or what do you got going on?
Well, you know, radio show.
I'm sorry, you're what? Really? You do that every week at this time? Or? You're cutting in and out or something. Are you on the road or something?
Oh, boy.
Dusty? Okay, then Peggy is in Tucson, Arizona, and she's there in Tucson. Hi, Peggy, you there?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Hi. What happened to Dusty? Any idea?
Sorry?
Oh, I guess you don't know. You're in Arizona.
I can't hear you, Michael.
Oh, you can't? How about now?
That's a little better. A
little better, okay. Here's the question. You want to see if you qualify?
Sure.
Okay, the Alpine Swift, the bird, if it feels like it can stay aloft, for how long? This bird can stay in the air for how long, the Alpine Swift? It holds the record, I believe.
Wow. Do you have, like, a range?
No, like
no.
4 months,
okay.
5 months, 6 months.
Well, let's see. I will say... 5 hours?
No, it's a lot longer than that.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, well.
Goodbye.
Thanks.
Goodbye. I got choked up. Just thinking about those Swifts up there that long. Tom is in Blacksburg, Virginia. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
What's going on?
Oh, standing out here with my dog.
With your dog? Where are you? Right.
Blacksburg, Virginia.
Oh, but I mean...
Out in my backyard.
Oh, you're in the backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. You looking for squirrels or something? Or?
Yeah. Well, we got a park right across the street.
Okay.
So we get all kinds of squirrels for the dog to chase.
Yeah. Does he ever get them?
Oh, all the time.
Oh.
Caught a rat inside the house last night.
A rat inside the house?
Yeah.
Oh. Got in through the dog door, probably.
I'm sorry?
Got in through the dog door is what I'm thinking.
Oh, no, they're crawling in the walls. This is an old building.
Okay. Well, let's talk about something else then. About these alpine swifts. They can stay in the air for, it seems like, months. You know how long a swift can stay in the air in the alpine there?
Constantly?
Yeah, without landing.
Oh. Oh, gosh, I would think about 10 or 12 hours.
Oh, it's a lot longer than that. But,
oh.
Okay. Thanks, though.
Thank you.
Talk to you. Bye. Laura Rose is in Eugene. Hey, Laura Rose.
Hey.
How are you?
12 hours. I'm good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, I'll give you a hint. It's actually in months. The answer's in months.
Really?
It seems unbelievable, but they can see it. Between
3 months.
I'm telling you, between you and me, it's even more than 3 months.
Okay. 4 months?
So think of, I'm telling you something. You'd be surprised how many months.
Like 9 months?
Oh, who stays up 9 months?
Pregnant ladies? Let's see. 7.5 months.
Well, not really. Let's be realistic about this. You're going to stay in the air 7.5 months. What is the point?
5.5.
Can we round up maybe?
Six.
6 months. Yes, you're exactly right.
I'm on the radio, so.
Good work. Good rock, Laura. Yeah, that was very good.
That was a lucky guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was good. You must be a bird person, are you?
I can recognize a chickadee and a junco, you know. Yep.
Okay, that's good.
Cardinal.
Laura Rose, this is Pam. She's your partner here.
Hi, Laura.
Pam.
Hi.
And the two of you know how this works, Laura Rose?
Yeah.
Two of you work together. Okay, collaborate on this. Very collaborative. And we have various categories, don't we, Sarah?
We do. They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Laura Rose, you pick first. What would you like?
Oh, good Lord. things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention.
All right, that's this one here. Does each nostril smell the same thing? Or are they specialists?
What do you think, Pam? Like, if you had a cold, would you smell
would
things the same?
I think mine work the same, but it's a trick question, so maybe...
Well, why would he be asking it if they were the
same?
Why would he be asking it?
Exactly.
Ask that
right.
So maybe it's no.
So I
that would
say
be pointless.
The answer is... Would you read the question again?
Yes. Does each nostril smell the same thing? Not too complicated,
okay.
Really.
I'll say no.
She says no.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, no. Actually, they actually can smell different smells. Isn't that interesting? Try it sometime. You can try this. I don't know how, but you can probably do it.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay. What you got left there, Sarah?
Current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Pam?
Science.
Science it is. The oldest cloned human tissue just turned what age? 8,000, 9,000, or 9,501?
Years?
Years, yes, years. The oldest cloned human tissue. So they found some human tissue that was pretty old, let's face it, and they managed to clone it. Somehow or other.
What were the choices again?
8,000, 9,000, and 9,501.
Oh, they're all kind of close. What do you think? Should we maybe go with the middle?
The middle sounds good. That's 9,000?
Test-taking skills?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's 8,000. 8,000 years, isn't it? Should be old enough. Okay.
Still pretty old.
All right, okay. Don't worry about it. You'll get back on track here.
You can't get them all right. I'm a first grade teacher, too. So.
Oh, first grade, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Now you want to think about second grade and hearing all this stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm actually taking the year off because it was so awful.
What's that score now?
It's one right and one wrong.
Okay. Laura Rose, back to you. What would you like? One of these.
Current events, people, places, or odds and ends?
How about people?
People it is. All right. Who do parents yell at most during their kids' games, during athletic games? Is it A, the officials, B, their kids, or see other kids? Yes, all of the above.
It's got to be either the coaches or their own kids. They don't tend to yell at other kids so much.
I'm thinking coaches.
Okay, so we have officials, their own kids, officials. Or other kids?
Or their own kids. It always amazes me how much they yell at their own kids.
You want to go with that feeling?
It's kind of surprising how often they yell at their own kids.
I'll go with you, because I've never been to a kid's game. So.
I've been to like one.
Okay. They don't have second grade games?
I went to a first grade basketball game. It was pretty cute.
Yeah.
They didn't have officials.
So you're saying their own kids?
Yeah.
Yes, their own kids. 55% of it goes to their own kids, 44% to the officials, and 40% towards other kids. So we got it all scientifically there. That would be...
two right and one wrong.
Okay.
And the categories that are left are current events, places, or odds and ends.
Okay. Pam?
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Okay. For each cigarette you smoke, deduct how many minutes of sleep? This has been studied at the University of Florida. So each cigarette you smoke, you lose this amount of sleep. Is it 1.2 minutes of sleep, 2.4, or 3.8 minutes of sleep for each cigarette smoked during the day?
Well, I suggested the middle the last time, and that didn't go so well. So.
Yeah. How about 3.8?
Well, that's a lot of sleep.
You lose an hour then if you smoke a pack? Seems to make sense to you.
Well, if it was
what were the other choices again?
1.2 minutes per cigarette, 2.4 or 3.8.
So it'd be either like 20, or they're like 20-some in there.
How about the first one, 1.2?
1.2, you're thinking? You're not a smoker, right?
I'm not a smoker.
No. Laura Rose, you smoke at all?
No.
Okay.
Of course not. It's very bad for you.
So you
do. You'll lose all that sleep.
All right, so you're saying 1.2?
Pam.
Yeah. 1.2 minutes. That's it. 1.2 minutes for each cigarette. So one wouldn't kill you, I guess. Oh, I'm sorry very much there.
Pam, you'll be heading to Genesee Depot, Wisconsin for a full tour of Ten Chimneys, the National Historic Landmark home lovingly created by Broadway theater legends Alfred Ludd and Lynn Fontanne from the Ten Chimneys Foundation. Laura Rose, begin every morning with What Do You Know attitude, drinking a cup of Stephen Brew's breakfast blend, and relax in the afternoon with Costa Rican Tara Sue from Madison Stephen Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. And each of you can encourage clean comedy for people born before seatbelts, Twitter, and Facebook, wearing a t-shirt from the Baby Boomer Comedy Show from Kent Rader Speaks, and continue the educational mirth reading What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Congratulations to you both.
Thanks, Pam.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for playing the quiz. Laura Rose, hang on there for a second. We'll get an answer from you. Nice talking to you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Catch What Do You Know live in Madison at the beautiful Monona Terrace. Tickets and scheduling information are available online at notmuch.com. And take What Do You Know with you with notmuch.com mobile. You can play the online quiz, listen to the archives, and purchase tickets all on the fly. It's all there at notmuch.com mobile. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. This is PRI Public Radio International. Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, competitive eater Eric Silo Dahl takes our donut challenge. Thanks for the memos and more of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who is not going to let Ted Cruz ruin Valentine's Day, it's Michael Feldman.
Thank you very much. You know, each week at this time, we get actual memos sent in by actual listeners. That's right. It's time for thanks for the memos. However, today is a little unusual. Sometimes we read letters as well if they're amusing or something. This may not be, but I never had one of my own, you know, memos or letters. And this one is me. And the background on this is it's a letter to the building inspector here in Madison. I've had several years of, I don't know if it's a neighbor, it's been turning me in on various minor things, you know, like shoveling my walk and overhang of garden on over sidewalk. You have to maintain airspace up to 200 feet over your sidewalk. And any leaves go, so if anyone wants to, they can get you into trouble for that. And so I've done all the things that they said, and but I had to write a little letter about it in form of protest. So that's, thanks for the memos, is actually this letter here.
It's a long.
It goes to the Building Inspection Division, City of Madison, Department of Planning and Economic Development. Dear Ms. Lester, not her name, am in receipt of your most recent notice of the third, which, while taking no note of the considerable effort it must have taken for a man with two confirmed degenerative discs and lumbago to dismantle and remove the non-compliant fence along my driveway, as well as cutting back the annually sighted vegetation barely protruding over the sidewalk. Hats off, by the way, for catching even this minor intrusion over 12 cubic feet of city airspace, even while missing the massive intrusion from the new condo development filling most of the next block, which, having been built up to the sidewalk, pretty much ensures that every plant on every balcony will technically be in violation of the overhanging vegetation over sidewalks ordinance. If an ordinance is that, is what it is. It may simply be a mindset, but as the kids say, whatever. At any rate, I was shocked to learn on the third that the couple of admittedly overgrown prickler bushes, not sure of the scientific name, but you know, with little red berries kids aren't supposed to eat, which hurt like heck should one attempt to trim them, are in non-compliance as well. I think it may not be the bushes per se, but a belief on the part of building inspection that a vehicle leaving my driveway, that would be my vehicle, would have any and all views of pedestrians already wending their way through the adjacent jungle canopy obscured by said bushes. Ironically, said bushes were previously hidden by the aforementioned fence and therefore not a known hazard until the fence itself came down. I don't know if you're anything like me, Ms. Lester, but I'm a sucker for irony. I know in citation 2 you proclaimed, if that's not too strong a word, that both fence and anything adjacent to or near must be reduced to 24 inches in height, but even if a guy had the right saw, a Milwaukee reciprocating, I'm thinking, to do it, a 2-foot fence is going to look pretty silly. Probably adversely impacting property values and economic development for all of us on the block, even if one of us, we suspect, keeps turning us in on all this. Believe me, being fined for 2 consecutive winters of not shoveling good enough when I pay a guy to do it is irretrievably lodged in my craw. I have not actually measured said bushes, since I can't get close enough without lacerating. But eyeballing, I would say 3, maybe 3.5 feet, with several spiky feelers reaching a couple feet closer to the source of all life. That is just the nature of living things. I'm sure you'll agree. I have never seen a 2-foot version of one of these prickly bushes in nature. There may be a bonsai version in Japan. If so, they are not popular around here. I remain willing and even anxious to don my big old cowskin gloves from Menards and hack them. Say, that's what they are, hackberries. With my sling blade salvaged from an old lawnmower to the requisite 24 inches, but I fear not so much personal injury as the end of said bushes as we know them, and wonder if you might reassure me as to viability once slashed to code. I don't mean to reduce this to viability versus visibility, but there you are. You know, I inherited the damn things, don't even like them, but I do feel a sense of responsibility regarding their survival, perhaps because at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat. Thank you so much. Anxious to comply, Michael Feldman. There you have it. My only regret, ladies and gentlemen, I took down the fence. I took out the bushes. I had to cut each one of those prickler things individually, and there were hundreds. And I couldn't use my hand for like 2 weeks.
Were there other people turned in besides you?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
So I'm still waiting to see if I passed code on this one. I usually get a letter about now.
Wow.
And so
I didn't think your house was that bad. I was over there this summer.
No, it could be a little better kept up, but overhanging sidewalk. Okay, well, here's something. Any of you here competitive eaters? Any of you eat like it was competitive? Yeah? Yeah? Here? Pretty good at it? Do you ever think about going professional? You going to? No, you thought about it, but you're going to. Well, we got a guy here who's done it for a living. Where is he right now? Is he here? I don't know if he's even here now. Eric Silo Dahl, ladies and gentlemen, from the University of Wisconsin, who pays tuition through competitive eating and is going to go for it today in the donut, rapid donut consumption. Have a seat there, if you will. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Nice to meet you. Read all about you. You're in what, engineering or something?
Yep,
some sort?
My senior year.
Yeah? Oh, cool. What sort of engineering is it?
Computer engineering.
Oh, okay. I don't know they engineered computers. How does that work?
Well, it's kind of like electrical engineering, so it does a lot with like, but with more with computer hardware.
Oh, really? So you'd be the guy who actually makes all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm going to do a sales engineering role, so I'm going to be selling that kind of stuff.
Oh, cool. How cool. Have you made tuition or at least books in miscellaneous by competitive eating?
Yeah, I'm approaching about $20,000 I've made in that. So.
Oh, holy cow. You shouldn't probably say that. You can't declare all this, can you? You don't want to declare all this.
I definitely do.
Oh, okay. So. Good man. You're a good man. And Silo, how long have you been called Silo?
For about 2 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's recent.
Yeah.
As a kid, did you eat?
My mom would probably say that I did, but I thought I ate normal, but maybe not.
And where'd you grow up?
Delano, Minnesota.
Oh, you did?
So just suburbs of Minneapolis.
Okay, all right. And what brought you to this great discovery that you could actually eat just about anything and very rapidly?
There's this 3-pound cheesesteak challenge at Big Red's before it closed down on University.
You probably closed it down.
And you had 10 minutes to do it, and I think I just wanted a free meal when I did it and the free T-shirt, but I did in about 5 minutes and 50 seconds, and that turned out to be like third fastest all time, and I just thought like, you know, maybe I got something in this.
Wow. That started something big. And is there a sanctioning body? I mean, is there that governs competitive eating?
So there's actually like 2 main sanctioning bodies.
No kidding.
And I eat for a company called All Pro Eating.
You eat for All Pro?
Yep.
Is that dog food? No, that's good. That's something else.
No. Yeah.
That would be too terrible, wouldn't it? Oh, so you're an All Pro Eater. You're on their squad?
Yep, I'm ranked number 3 in their rankings.
In their ranking? Yeah. You know, 2-1?
Yep. I don't like them very much.
No. Have you run into them in some of
these? Yeah, they're both really good. So.
Yeah, yeah. They're not from around here, though.
So. One's from Connecticut, one's from Nebraska.
Okay, well, you don't care about them. They're not from around here. This is a little local pride going on here. And you can eat disgusting things as well?
Yep. Have you heard of lutefisk?
Oh, yeah, sure. Who hasn't heard of lutefisk?
So there was a competition run by All Pro. In 6 minutes, I ate 9.5 pounds.
That's what we should have done here, but we couldn't stand to be in the same room with it. 9 pounds, that's probably more than anyone's ever eaten in their lifetime. And I think you said it's in some interview I saw that you can't consider taste at all when doing this, or you can't do it, right?
Right, yeah. You're not thinking about that.
How do you shut off your taste thing? Like when you're facing 9 pounds of lutefisk, how do you shut off the smell, I guess would be?
You just shut it off. That's, you know, you just don't think about it. That's the easiest way that I can describe it. So.
Yeah, shut it off. And you're able to do that.
Yeah.
So you have great mind control, let's say, as well.
Yeah.
And is there a physical training that goes into it? Do you have to...
The main part is training your capacity. So that pretty much means, you know, putting more and more stuff in your stomach to increase the volume where it's never been. And that's uncomfortable, to say the least. So
you have increased the volume. It doesn't look like your stomach is very increased compared to something I could mention. But how do you increase the volume of your stomach?
My main training regimen is like pounds and pounds of low-calorie vegetables, such as like broccoli, cabbage, that kind of stuff, and then as much water as I can handle on top of it. So in one training session, I've gained about 20 pounds.
Just from cabbage?
About 10 pounds of cabbage and the rest some food and water.
Cabbage puts weight on you?
Well, 10 pounds of cabbage cooked is only about like 1,300 calories. And so it takes, I eat about 3,100 calories to stay at the same weight. So, you know, it's...
What's the point then? Okay, I see you're training him. So you eat all those calories, a certain amount of calories anyhow, but it's low calorie, high volume.
High volume, yep.
Is that because of the gas from the cabbage?
It's probably an added training benefit, yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Now, we have, you usually do like, is there a jelly donut competition per se? Those Polish donuts.
Yeah, right? Yep. I did a team competition, and in the first minute, I ate about five, so yeah. I'm going to try to break that today.
What are they called? The
Potchkes.
Potchkes, yeah. Okay, and is there anything different between a potchke and the average jelly donut?
No idea,
okay.
I just eat.
Okay, so now I guess what we have here, we have a bunch of donuts, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so, or maybe a few more, on a table there, and some water. Water is part of it?
Oh, yeah, water's definitely part of it.
Yeah, and do you soak the donuts before eating them, or do you...
Cups look a little small, yeah. But if you can dunk, you definitely want to. It just makes it easier to go down than pretty much any food.
Okay, that's true, like those hot dog competitions that I've seen them doing. Okay. Yeah. So you will have a minute here now. I understand five is your personal record.
Yep.
Is there a national record or
a... It's tough to tell because, you know, with these donuts, they could be different than anybody,
right?
You know, that anybody's ever eaten before.
Okay, so. And this is not a sanctioned event.
Really?
Has this been approved by the All-Pro people?
No, I mean they're pretty lax. The other league, Major League Eating, they would not let me do this because you have to sign a 3-year exclusivity contract. Oh. You can only do their events.
Thank God you're an All-Pro. I mean, it ruined this whole thing here. Just sat and talked about them and stared at the donuts. All right, so you're going to have a minute, and I guess we will be timed. Who's timing this? Tony back in the booth?
Oh, okay. The phone is. Okay.
So the phone, when that starts, is that when it begins? And when it rings again, is that when it's over?
10 seconds when it rings.
10 seconds when it rings a second time, and then we'll count them down, I guess, the last 10 seconds. See how far you get. You're going for 6, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to take your position here? It's very exciting, all of us here. He's shaking it out. He's a big guy, but they call him the silo, ladies and gentlemen, arranging the water. Tong's got a plate there of jelly donuts with the frosting on them. Whole thing. Okay.
Wait
a minute. Oh, don't worry about that.
There's still a dart on the floor.
He was trying
to
be helpful. I think we're okay.
Yeah.
Okay with the dart there.
Good.
Yeah. All right. You're going to give us a ring to begin it?
He's shaking.
He's off. He's eating the first one. He's drinking water and going through the donut.
Full crouch.
Full crouch. Yeah. Full crouch. Drink more water. And there goes the first jelly donut.
Good.
Pretty good. Time-wise, we're doing here. Okay. Yep. Lost a little bit of filling, but I don't think that counts against him. That's going to happen.
Oh.
Okay. Second donut is going down a little faster, it seems like.
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of water being spilled here, but that's okay. We'll get that later. Two down.
The throat muscles.
Yeah.
In spasm.
This is third right now. His concentration is amazing, really. When you consider actually what he's doing, he has amazing concentration. That's third one down.
Yes.
This is number four.
Oh, 10 seconds.
Oh, we have 10 seconds. He's got to get through this one.
Yes.
Down number four. Six. Five, four, three, two, one. Yes. Oh, good effort. Hey, good effort. How many was that? Four? Five? Did you hit four?
Four.
Four donuts. Not a world's record, but a massively good effort. The water was holding back a little bit. We didn't set a record here, but I think you did a great job. How'd you feel about that, Silo?
Felt pretty good, but these were big donuts, a little dry. So
big donuts and a little dry, but a massive effort. Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Silo Dahl. Non-sanctioned event, did a great job. Four donuts in 1 minute. Thanks, Silo. Let's hear it for him. Very nearly tied his own best there. It was close, but they were big donuts, and they were dry. They are big, actually. We should have got him some smaller donuts.
We should have him back. An annual event. I like it.
Yeah, and we can have different things. We can do,
yeah,
I
next
like
time,
to do the
lamb chops.
Lamb chops.
I want to do the lutefisk one. That would be a good one. Yeah. Oh, that was great. That was great. And he has a website, too, so you can check that out. Well, just look him up. Looking for Silo. Eric Silo Dahl, D-A-H-L. And, yeah. I should ask him when his next big competition. When's your next big competition?
Right now, it's kind of the off-season.
So. Oh, you're in your off-season right now?
Yeah. Okay,
let us know, because we want to follow your career. A lot of local pride going on here. There goes Silo. You're a pretty good eater, though, John.
I don't do that.
Yeah. You know who's a good eater, actually, is our very own Lyle Anderson in the booth there. But he's a good eater in the sense of eating everything.
Everything on his plate.
On his plate, yeah. You know. But he's not rapid in the least.
No.
He's not quick about it. He's still eating some stuff we had on the road in Mississippi. Yes. You want to say anything? Try and see if your microphone works. Just so I know that...
He likes cabbage.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
Okay. if you were eating competitively, what do you think you could do a pretty good job on in a short time? What sort of food?
Oysters.
Oh, that's a good choice.
I've seen him do it, actually.
Really?
Yeah, down in Oxford. He did quite a few oysters.
Right,
because they were free, you know.
So. Oysters.
There's that element to it. Okay, there you have it. Thanks, Eric, for that. And a chance for a little tune here now. Tell us a little something about this song. Debussy or Stravinsky?
No, actually, neither one of those, strangely enough.
Yeah.
Neither one of those. So.
You know what he said in his book that I thought was interesting? He said that orchestras don't play in tune. They're never in tune. Then he said pianos are the same thing. He said pianos are
never
in tune.
No, they never are. Even when they're like really... The tuner really nails it. It's
yeah.
The fifths are always contracted and the fourths are always expanded, and there's difference.
I always thought that
weird.
Myself. Yeah. I'm pretty sensitive to those little.
Yeah,
variations.
You are. You're very sensitive.
It could drive you crazy. I mean, if you're someone who had like perfect pitch or something like that,
yeah, it does. Like, people think perfect pitch is like a great thing, and you're going to be a great musician. But actually, no. A perfect pitch is you want relative pitch, but perfect pitch can just some people have it. It just drives them crazy.
Yeah. You're not one of those people.
No, I'm not.
Okay. This tune here, tell us about it. And where
it's
it
a tune
from.
Called Yesterdays.
Yesterdays, plural.
Yesterdays.
Yeah. Where did it come from?
And it came from I think it was a Broadway. Broadway musical called Yesterdays, I believe. Yeah.
Same name, huh?
Yeah, same name.
Okay.
I think. Is that right? Or was that the other song? I don't know. I looked them both up last night so I could know something about them, and then I immediately forgot it all. So.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
I'm sorry, we don't serve time travelers. A time traveler walks into a bar. Okay. Anyone here with the second annual statistical detection of test fraud conference going on in this very building? Because I sure would like to know what that's all about.
The what? What is it? Statistical, what is it?
Statistical Detection of Test Fraud Conference. It's the second one.
Oh, thank goodness.
So apparently it worked out really good the first time. Enough to do it again. No one's here with them. Okay. I guess we'll never know what that is. How about Russ Weil from Long Island, financial advisor. Are all politicians crazy? I don't know. Are all financial advisors? Yeah. Is that you then? Oh, okay. All right then. Okay. Let's see, can we get some advice from you here? Give us any advice. For free? No, you probably won't do it for free. Can I just stand up here? Come on over here. Don't be shy. You're from Long Island. How can you be shy? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Yeah. So what's going on?
Enjoying your show.
here in town for something important?
My daughter.
Yeah. Does she go to school here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where is she? Hi, how are you? And what is she studying?
Nursing.
Nursing? She didn't want to go into financial advice like her dad?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. And all politicians crazy? Want to leave it at that?
Yeah.
Financial advisors?
Yes.
They vary across the board, though, don't they?
Yes, they do.
You're one of the sane ones, though.
I try to be.
Let me say, Krugerrands? Yes or no?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Didn't cost me a cent. No Krugerrands. Christy from Denver, what is the reason that men always forget the tickets to the show like this one? So how did you get in then, Christy, if you forgot them? Where is Christy? Oh, but she's not here. Okay, isn't that funny? Someone sent her a card in ahead of her. Why do you let him take care of the tickets then, Christy? One would ask that question. If this keeps happening to you. I mean, when you go to the opera without tickets and that sort of thing. Hey, Silo, hanging around, huh? I see. Sorry about the donuts. That was so unfair.
No problem.
They were not regulation donuts. That's, otherwise, you would have got easily six in those if they've been regulation. How are you? Pretty good. Nice to see you. How are you? All together? Just all a group? Yeah. What holds this group together?
Me, I guess. Yeah.
Did you get all these people to come here for some reason?
Well, they came down for the show, and we're from Madison, so visiting family. Okay. So.
And you'd never been to it probably, being from here.
We're virgins to your show, so.
Well, let's hope you leave some other way. I'm not sure what that would be, you know. What? She's pregnant? Oh, good. Okay, I said it again. There you go. Oh, boy. How does he do it? Stand up, Christy. Let's have a look. Christy, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Denver, Colorado. How are you?
Good. This is the third time it's happened, so that we've forgotten the tickets
to this show.
No, to a show or the time that the show starts, and we love shows, and so somehow we seem to either show up. We get it in our heads that a show starts at 6:30, and it really started at 6, or we forgot the tickets, and so we're big NPR donors, and so we got the tickets as part of our donation, and then we got here to the door, and we realized we didn't bring the tickets, and we brought guests. So.
Believed you when you told them this story? It's a sob story. Do you use it at the opera when you go? Or?
We begged, and they were very sweet to us.
What was the last show you didn't get into because you forgot them?
They actually let us in on that one, too. It was back in Minneapolis, and it was a show there at the Ordway, and they ended up letting us in a little late.
What was it?
Gosh.
In Plaid one? Or the...
It was a play. But I'm forgetting what
it left an impression, anyhow. If you missed it, it would have been a big deal, really.
Well, actually, what we did was we found that the play was actually on my smartphone, so we watched part of it as we were driving because we realized we were going to be an hour late. Oh.
And then you didn't have the tickets, right?
We didn't have the tickets, so.
Is it your fault?
I remembered the tickets. Unfortunately, I remembered them a little late, and we were already in the hallway of the building. But I remember the tickets. Okay.
Maybe you shouldn't trust him with the whole ticket thing. Have you thought of taking that over?
Well, we thought our fail-safe was to put him in my car, but we forgot to put him in my car. So.
You put him in the car, and what happened?
Well, our goal now is to leave them in the car because we always have to drive the car to the show. But our friends brought us.
So. Oh, okay. This gets worse. I don't think there's any solution to it, but I'm glad you're here, though.
Thank you. Thank you.
Christy and the gang. All right. Is local Madison politics in disarray like Wisconsin State and Washington, D.C.? No, we've had the same mayor that we had like 30 years ago. So unfortunately, he's lost a few, you know, cells. Because it was the 60s, let's face it, you know. You see him wandering around the city counting building, but he doesn't do any real damage, so that's... All right, here's what is an endoplasmatic reticulum? Erica Freiberg wants to know. Erica Freiberg.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to come down here and find out, I bet. I bet you. Do I have one?
Maybe.
Maybe, I think so.
I remember learning it in 7th grade.
Oh, I see. This is an old... Well, stand up here, Erica Freiberg, actor. You're an actor?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what are you appearing in currently?
Well, I'm going to be on stage in Chicago next weekend. Yeah.
Playing in what?
At Second City. We're doing an improv show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Improv mostly?
Yeah, but I actually signed with an agency here in Madison, so yeah. I might be doing voice acting as well, hopefully, and getting paid for it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, cool. Do you have a particular character that you tend to be in these improv things?
Crazy, whatever. I mean, it's just improvising, so whatever I feel at the moment, I just kind of go with it.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. However, what is an endoplasmatic reticulum?
And you're saying it right. That's awesome. It's, I don't know, it's scientific. It's something with an atom or a cell. I don't know. I asked you.
You don't even know.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you.
Well, how do you know if I have one or I don't? Endoplasmatic.
I learned it in science class, so I know you have it somewhere.
Okay. Can anyone know what an endoplasmatic reticulum is or where I could get one? Yeah. Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. Very nice to meet you.
Thank
good luck
you.
On that. I have to go over here to find out what that is. Is she with you?
Well, kind of, yeah. But that's why she asked you. She doesn't know what it is.
I'm not a know-it-all. If I don't have it on an index card in front of me, I know nothing. That's why I got into this business, so I could know few things, you know, that they're out there. There's a guy who wants to be an eater. Think you could do it?
I could, yeah, I could eat six in a minute, sure.
You could? Should we get that out here again and have you?
My mom says no, so.
We got a challenge right here. Have you ever done it at all?
No, I mean, I ate french fries really fast as a kid, so. Champion french fry eater.
Did you do that at the table at home?
He did, yes, he did. Uh-huh.
More like speed eating?
Get in his mouth, the better, the happier he was.
Yeah. Siblings?
Yeah, older sister.
So you had to do it, otherwise you
had to eat.
For serve, I guess.
Motivation, okay, all right, cool, that's cool. Oh, okay, endoplasmatic reticulum. Yes, you know? Okay, here. Stand up here. You are, you're nursing, right? So that's, yeah. Your name is?
Natalie.
Natalie. What is it, Natalie?
It's the UPS factory inside of a cell. Packages proteins for functioning of the body.
Thank you for bringing it down to our level, where we can understand that. It's a UPS factory in the cell. It manufactures the protein?
It packages them and sends them to the correct spot in the
cell.
They
come unpackaged, the proteins do?
Yeah.
It wraps a little reticulum around them?
No. the proteins come from the RNA inside the middle of the cell, and then it moves out to the side of the cell and gets sent everywhere around the body.
Well, what do they wrap them into?
Cardboard and ribbons.
All right, she's still in school. She haven't gotten to that semester yet. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. There you go. See? I know nothing, but my audience knows everything if we take them all together. This week, NASA said an asteroid passed the Earth. In about another 20 years, it's coming back and may hit the Earth. How are you preparing for the end? Frankly, if it's 20 years, I'm cool with that. Works for me. You know, I feel bad for everybody else, but so no preparations necessary. I'm seated next to a recent winner of a Michael Feldman lookalike contest. Would you like to meet him? Tom Kennedy. I didn't know there were such contests. I'd be surprised. Tom Kennedy sitting next to someone who...
No.
The guy from Gretna? Come on, give me a break. The guy from Gretna? All right, let's stand up and see if he can tell us apart. Come on over here, Mr. Gretna guy.
This is great radio, by the way.
This is great radio, huh? What do you think? Wait a minute, don't go away so fast. We're just getting to know you. I mean, do you think we look alike?
Well, no, but I would like to. Handsome chap.
Well, I'd like to look like you, too, well, but I'm not under that illusion, okay. You know what I'm saying. And in Gretna, do people stop you in the street in Gretna, Nebraska? And
very
say,
seldom. Very seldom.
Me neither. See, I never get mistaken for me, even. So, and your name is?
Dick Farlow.
Dick Farlow from Gretna.
Yes.
Is this Mrs.?
This is Mrs. Farlow.
Mrs. Farlow, hello.
Hi.
And my friends warned me this could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, the odds were against it. Yeah. Yeah, but has anyone ever said anywhere that you look like Michael Feldman?
No. Ted Kooser, not Michael Feldman.
Ted Kooser.
Yes.
Poet. Ted. Oh, the poet Ted Kooser. Okay. I get mistaken for him all the time, so I guess there's a connection here. Very nice to meet you.
Likewise.
You look good, whatever you look like. I don't know. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz, a chance for you to win fabulous prizes. Pull in your feet, because I do step on them. And here's a chance for you to win some of those prizes you heard earlier, and even others, some of which are worth having. So let's see the hands of anyone here who wants to play. What?
The disclaimers.
Don't worry if we hear disclaimers.
Just have a little anxiety up here.
What?
I want to make sure we're covered.
But disclaimer. Anyone want to read? Nah, you know. We need that. Let's see the hands. Of the, yes, there are hands. It's not overwhelming or anything, but yes, that's. See, it seems like you want to do it. Okay. Oh, you do. We do. Okay. She's very excited about it. She seemed a little calm, so I wasn't sure. Oh, this is exciting. This is exciting. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
And you are?
Anna.
Anna. Mm-hmm. Remember the Anna part? Mm-hmm. And you're from around here, Anna?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I live here.
You live right here in Madison?
Yep.
Okay. You know how to get to Wollersheim's Winery then?
I think it's past the giant corn maze.
Right. If you're in the corn maze, you've gone not far enough. Okay. Anna, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
To make my mother proud.
Make your mother proud. Isn't the what? Is there a better reason? I think not. Come on down here, Anna. Right this way. Come on, we got a long walk. Yes, keep it going. Keep it going. Anna, if you would have a seat right over there. Here, I'll change these waters out here. Leftover jelly donuts, if you want.
I think that other guy called dibs.
Anna, so what are you doing these days? Are you working or
I'm
school?
A Spanish medical interpreter.
A Spanish medical interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
You interpret Spanish medicine?
I go into office visits with patients who are limited English speaking, limited English
cool.
proficient.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
I interpret.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good job.
It's an excellent job. I love it.
Yeah. How did you happen to find a job like that?
It was something I've always wanted to do. I always wanted to interpret, and this is the most accessible form of interpreting, I think, so
yeah.
I got into it.
So who do you work for then when you do that?
I work at Dean Clinic.
Oh, you do at
mm-hmm.
Dean. Very cool. Very cool. And you're a Spanish speaker, obviously.
I do speak Spanish, yeah.
Yeah. And how is that learned in school, or do you live there for a while, live in Spain
both.
Or Mexico?
Yeah, actually, I'm German. I moved here from Germany when I was little, and my mom was a German teacher, and the only other language we had was Spanish, so I went for that.
Because you couldn't take your mom, right?
Yeah.
I got my mom fifth hour. This is a bad feeling. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. All right, what else is going on in your life? Good things?
My boyfriend's mom is visiting.
Boyfriend's
so
mom? Is that a good thing?
Madison, so it is a good thing.
There she is. She
We're
looks
having a good
so
time.
Sweet. She likes you, I can tell.
So, yeah, so I brought her here.
Yeah,
so.
And she looks very sweet. That's good. That's a good thing. Is she staying long?
I'm sorry, what?
Is she staying long?
Is she staying long?
Long?
No.
Long. Just brief.
Too short for me.
Very good. Okay, Anna, someone out there plays along with you in the quiz, and how does that work then,
Sarah? People who want to play along, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669. And answer this qualifying question.
Which one?
Whichever one you're going to ask.
Oh, this one I'm going to ask here. Okay. Kakistocracy. You know, there are various forms of government, and we should really try thinking about a couple of the other ones now, is what I'm thinking. Democracy is good and all, and it works. But there is one called a kakistocracy, and I want to know what is a kakistocracy, and perhaps you already have one. So if you know, give us a call here at, what's the number again?
1-800-942-5669.
Kakistocracy. Something to think about. Or maybe we already have. That's the question. If you know what that is, it's kind of a school question, I guess. And let's go to the phones right now. Elizabeth is online from Grand Rapids.
Yes.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Is it meeting, ruling by committee?
No, that's a different kind of ocracy. I've seen that one, too.
Okay. Thanks, anyways.
Yeah, well, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Rodney's in Memphis. Rodney, you ever hear of a kakistocracy? Rodney?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing? Were you doing something?
Or
you were caught in the middle of something, huh?
No. I'm driving.
Oh, you're driving? Where are you going?
Going up to see my wife at the hospital.
Oh, no. Is she okay?
Oh, yeah, she's doing much better.
Oh, okay. I'm glad to hear it. Boy, that's kind of scary, you know. Well, you got time to do this here? Maybe you're preoccupied.
Oh, shoot, yeah. I'm ready.
Okay. She's fine. She's doing fine. Cacistocracy is what sort of government? Ruled by what?
The only thing I can think is the caucuses that they have in some states is kind of a get-together of people that discuss the situation and decide who they're going to vote for in an intelligent manner. So maybe it's a sub-form of government where everybody gets together and discusses it and they make a decision.
That sounds like a good idea, actually. We should even try that. That'd be a caucus democracy, I suppose. So that's not this one, though.
All right.
Best to your wife now.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Robert's online from Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah? You got a busy day planned, Robert, or what you doing today?
Well, I'm at work now, but...
Oh, you are?
But later I'm going to go take care of goats.
Take care of goats?
Goats, yes.
Yeah, where are you working?
I'm in a textile factory. I'm in my office. I'm just cleaning up and organizing things.
Okay, great. Robert, you ever hear of a cacistocracy?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I know what a fine schmecker is, though. That was. This is the only time I've ever managed to make it in, but.
Oh.
No, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, too. Okay.
Okay.
Talk to you again sometime.
Yeah.
All right, bye. All right, Dan is in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. You up to anything right now? Or?
Just watching Man City and West Ham United go at it, but that's about it. It's cold and rainy here, so I can't do any yard work.
Oh, yeah. You would be out there otherwise, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Dan, a cacistocracy.
I think it's the society ruled by the worst people in the society.
That's exactly right, Dan. So I guess maybe we have one. This could be it. It's a trick question. Now, how did you know that? You didn't look it up, did you, Dan? You knew that, right?
No, I didn't. I read it once when someone was talking about the Bush administration, believe it or not.
You know, they're looking pretty good about now, actually, if you think about it, as ironies go. And Dan, what do you do in life as we know it?
I'm a carpenter for Columbus City Schools.
Oh, you are? Oh, cool. So you got your weekends are precious, as I'm sure you're not working at all, and you got any...
Actually, I'm on call this weekend, so I got a call to do some repairs at 1:30 this morning, so...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Did you do it already? You were out there?
Oh, yeah.
At 1:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
What's so important that you got to be out there at 1:30 in the morning?
Someone broke a window, and so it left the building unsecured.
Yeah.
It happens.
Shouldn't be your problem, Dan. That's the window guys, not the carpenters.
We do it all. Everything from roofs to the basement floors.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Thank you for doing that, Dan.
Yeah, thank you.
You're the man. Appreciate it. Dan's out there, middle of the night. Don't break those windows, kids. What the heck? Dan, this is Anna.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, Anna.
She is your partner in here, and you guys work together, and it's collaborative, okay?
Okay.
Good with that? Okay. Dan and Anna, we have various categories, don't we, Sarah?
We do. They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Do you have a favorite of those categories?
I think odds and ends is always interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Or sometimes interesting.
Nothing is always anything. I mean, right? Come on.
Right.
Yeah. Dan, you can pick the first one. What would you like?
Odds and ends.
Good choice.
It's always interesting. Komodo dragons. Bad oral hygiene or good? It's just a bad rap. They always say, don't ever get bitten. Well, of course, you wouldn't want to get bitten by one, but they said because of they have every microbe and bacteria known to man in their mouth. But I'm asking here, Komodo dragons, bad oral hygiene or good?
I guess this is sort of a 50-50, so I'll go with good. What do you say, Anna?
I feel like short arms equals bad, but long tongue equals good.
Hey, like your mother-in-law is here. You want to be talking? Ixnay on the... Ungte.
Maybe cold-blooded equals good, less... What do you think, Dan?
He said good.
He said good. Yeah. I'll go with good.
Good. Yeah, good. Actually, they have good oral hygiene, so don't be afraid of them. Go right up to them. Pet him on the old snout. They get bad press, those Komodo dragons.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay. What's left there?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school or science.
Have you ever seen a Komodo dragon in your
Only
travels?
Only photos.
Only photos, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. What would you like?
Can we do current events?
Current events? We certainly can. The most popular dog costumes this Halloween. You know, people are always dressing their dogs. And one of these is the most popular one that's selling this year for Halloween. Is it the Ewok, Yoda, or the Princess? The Princess dog costume for Halloween 2013.
What do you think, Dan?
I like the Ewok myself.
This is for your dog. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, if I had a dog, I'd probably go with that one.
Yeah. We're trying to think of the general population now.
I'm going to admit that I don't really know what an Ewok is.
Okay, let's just leave it out then.
Okay. So,
it's
the
Ewok,
other one.
Princess.
That big furry thing that's in one of those.
Little furry thing.
Yeah.
What was a princess Ewok?
I know it has a long tongue and a short claws. What? Oh, yeah. Ewok, Yoda, or a princess costume?
I'll go with Ewok since he likes that one.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. It's a princess. It's the time-tested. Dress your dog like a princess. How many of you are dressing your dogs like princess? Applaud if you're dressing your dog like a princess for Halloween.
Nobody.
Not this group so much. Not the public radio audience. They don't go for it. Are any of you dressing your dogs for Halloween? Whatever happened to that tradition? That time-honored tradition? Okay, that would be...
One right and one wrong.
Okay, don't worry about it. You'll get back on this track here. And what's left?
People, places, things you should have learned in school or science.
Dan?
People.
People. Okay. Does that happen often, where you get a call in the middle of the night to fix a window or something?
Usually you can count on it at least once during a week.
Once during the week? Wow, that's a drag. Yeah. Did you just board it up, or did you replace the window?
We board it up, and then Monday we'll go in and actually do the repair.
Oh, okay.
I feel like you could really rack up your own business, like breaking windows. Need a call?
Are you suggesting that Dan goes around during the day and breaks?
Only once a week.
School windows? Percentage of people who'd like to live to be at least 101. Is it 0%, 3%, or 8%? People who say they'd like to live to be at least 101.
I'll say 3%.
I'm going to go with that, too, because I don't think there's a lot of people that would want to live that long. I think I'd start to break down around 80.
No, you start to break down around 80. I don't know if the percentage changes.
So, yeah, we'll go for the middle.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. No, it's 8% of the population wants to be at least 101.
Wow.
You're too young to appreciate how desperately
apparently.
You want to cling to whatever for as long as possible. So that would be...
That's one right and two wrong.
Okay, so you can't get any wronger, but, you know... Don't worry, Feldman will kick in here at a certain point.
The categories remaining are places, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Okay.
Choose wisely.
Places.
Places? Okay. If it's money you're after, which state should you not run for office in? The lowest paid state legislature. Okay? Is it Kansas, Alabama, or Vermont?
Any thoughts, Dan?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first one. It kind of broke up. I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The lowest paid legislator would be in Kansas, Alabama, or Vermont.
I like Alabama.
You like Alabama?
I'm going to go with...
She likes Alabama.
She likes Alabama.
Kansas, though.
I know Vermonters would seem to be, I don't know, kind of frugal people up there in the Northeast.
Yeah.
There's no one.
But she likes Alabama.
Alabama? Oh, okay, well then, Alabama sounds good to me.
Alabama sounds good.
Have you been
good.
To Alabama? It's very nice, actually.
I would like to go.
But I don't want to be a legislator necessarily.
No.
Yep.
I think we're going to go with that.
Yeah.
Alabama.
Dan, Alabama. Yes, Alabama, $1,000 a year. Just to run the darn thing. Okay. All right, it's even up then, isn't it?
It is. It's two right and two wrong.
Oh, this is it then. Excitement.
And the categories remaining are things you should have learned in school or science.
Okay. Dan, what do you think?
Things you should have learned in school or science. Let's go with things you should have learned in school.
Okay. Would you rather be a frigate or a destroyer? Yeah, that's a stupid question.
Well, it depends. I mean, a frigate, if you're looking for speed, I'd prefer to be a frigate, but if I'm looking to destroy something, I'd say a destroyer.
Well, this is a good question for you then, man. I'm going to put this back in. The... So you're saying you'd rather be a frigate under certain circumstances?
Yeah.
And you know the circumstances? So the frigates are faster?
I believe so, yeah.
A little bigger, maybe?
Sure.
And you're saying the destroyers, however, are probably more armament on a destroyer.
Right.
That's a factor. So yeah. Are you saying it's a personal choice, really, between a frigate and a destroyer, as to which you'd rather be?
Yeah, I would think so. It all depends on you where your priorities lie.
Huh. Anna, you want to jump in on
that's,
this?
I do not. That sounds excellent.
Are you leaning frigate or destroyer?
I have no idea.
But you're willing to go with Dan because
I'm willing to go with Dan because he sounds pretty sure. He sounds pretty confident.
He's thought about this or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's take your answer, Dan, whatever it is. Depends. Let's be flexible. And you win the quiz. It was a very... he was too smart for the question. That should be rewarded. Congratulations, you won. What do they want?
Anna, your front yard will display the pride of the tropics and Badger football with a tastefully tacky pair of red and white plastic flamingos from Pink Ink.
Whoa, that's nice.
Dan, find out what surprising percentages of Republicans and Democrats are likely to water ski. And what do you know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. And both of you can create a cohesive murder mystery with Jack Pachuta's super secret mystery writing system from mysteriesonthenet.com and continue the fun, playing What Do You Know the Party Game, including the eternally optimistic Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishings, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you very much.
Great job, Dan. Hang on just a second. Make sure you get that stuff. Thanks for playing, man.
Thank you.